Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Pete Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is here!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay, and Deputy Head of Sport, the Herald and Times, Scott Mullen, will look back on yesterday's defeat to St Johnston. We'll reflect on the 3-2 victory in the Betfred League Cup against Ross County, discuss another departure from Fir Park, and I would imagine we will discuss over the course of the evening the standard of Scottish refereeing in our first three matches of the season so far. Guys, thank you for joining us tonight.
Cheers.
Well, Jay, it was a very eventful afternoon at McDermott Park yesterday, in the end a 4-1 defeat, but I don't think that'll be the main talking point from the game. Three sending offs for Motherwell, two in very, very dubious circumstances, referee Craig Thompson seemingly having had one of the worst refereeing performances in the second half I think I've ever witnessed. Absolutely deplorable. The standard of Scottish referee, and there seems to be no accountability whatsoever at this moment in time. You can have as long as you want to try and sum up your feelings of what went down in an incredible afternoon.
Hi, I'm just enjoying how you finished off the introduction by saying we might at some point talk about the standard of Scottish refereeing, and then just launch straight into it. But rightfully so. It was just so surreal, I think. Really, really surreal to kind of be there and witness it all. I think it's, you know, first and foremost, it's important to say that we didn't play particularly well. First 20 minutes, again, I thought we were really, really poor. Our defending was shocking, particularly for both O'Halloran's goals. I mean, we basically allowed O'Halloran to look far better than he is. And don't get me wrong, he's a good player. But the defending and the way we stood off him was really poor. And I think it's important to, you know, stress that nobody is trying to blame the referee for the way Motherwell played, or you know, no one's suggesting that he cost us the game as such. You know, it's not sour grapes, basically. But you're right, I think it was an incredible performance by Craig Thompson. I think there's still an argument to be had that all three of them were dubious. I know that Carol McHugh's perhaps... Nowadays, it is more the letter of the law that Craig Thompson perhaps got that right with the yellow card. So perhaps my problem is more with the actual law itself or the rules themselves rather than Craig Thompson, because for me that is a hard and solid but fair tackle. I won the ball. But, you know, second yellow, fair enough. The two that you mentioned, the first and third red cards, I mean, the first one, you know, was it on the line, was it not? From what I've seen, which has been limited because I've been away out today, so I've only really caught the highlights briefly. You know, I think there's an argument to be said that it's on the line. The linesman doesn't give anything. I know that the argument nowadays is that, well, they're wired up, he's got an earpiece, he might have said something to the referee. Anybody who was at the game in the Motherwell end, as soon as that happened, glanced at the linesman. It's a natural thing to do. And the linesman's body language and reaction to it was not that's outside the box. He reacted to it the way... You know, you would have if a goalkeeper had picked the ball up anywhere within his 18-yard box. He's got a flag there. His flag is not just to alert the referee to what's been going on. but the players, the management, and I suppose on a certain level, the supporters as well. So I don't buy that the linesman gave that. And Craig Thompson is a good 40 or 50 yards away from play. I mean, there's a shot of the highlights where, you know, Carson is just picking the ball up and Craig Thompson is nowhere to be seen on the screen. He's nowhere near it. So how he can give that is beyond me. And of course, the third one is just a joke. I mean, the boy kicks the ground and Charles Dunn gets his second red card in 4 days. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the appeals. But it's more than the big decisions. You know, it's easy to look at it and go, well, you know, those three big decisions, maybe you got one wrong, two wrong, three wrong, who knows. But Craig Thompson was poor throughout the game. From about 3 or 4 minutes in, when he awarded a free kick to St Johnson, you know, for a perceived foul by Andy Rose on Murray Davidson, when all that actually happened was Murray Davidson, you know, slapped the ball. You can watch that from any angle, you know, as many times as you want. There is simply no way that's a foul, and yet Craig Thompson gives it. Another example, you know, Louis Moult roasts two St Johnson players to actually get us in a great counter-attack, and Thompson inexplicably brings it back for a foul. It's just, you know, the standard of refereeing for the full 90 minutes was absolutely shocking. So let's not, you know, just focus on the main talking points, the ones that people see in the highlights, and the ones that perhaps changed the game. But, you know, I just thought throughout the game it was pathetic. There's no accountability, there's no transparency. Even the BBC highlights, I think it's Rob McLean that does the commentary, there's zero questioning of any of the decisions. I mean, it's just accepted that because the referee's given, you know, even in the third one, when it's so clear that the St Johnson player kicks the ground and falls, Rob McLean sees no need to mention that. It's a penalty because the referee's given it. You know, there just seems to be zero accountability. And even at the end, you know, you had Craig Thompson giving the Motherwell support the eyes when we were taking corners because he was getting a bit of abuse. Just everything about it was just a really disgraceful and unprofessional performance from what is supposedly one of our best referees. And of course, nothing will come of it. You know, it'll barely get mentioned because it's not a high-profile game. And he'll be back, you know, refereeing a top-flight game next week.
Scott, I know that you were elsewhere yesterday, but you'll have seen the main incidents. We must say that we've not seen Sports Scene as yet. I'm not 100% sure as to why there's not an earlier showing of a Sports Scene along with the later evening one tonight. But anyway, that aside, you've seen the major incidents. A very strange performance by Craig Thompson. And Jay makes a very interesting point. The fact that the worst that could happen to a referee just now has been demoted down a league or two for a weekend or maybe 2 weekends. It doesn't seem like really much of a punishment for a referee to put in a performance of that standard. We're very early on in the season. It's not a season-changing performance by any means. And as Jay pointed out as well, and I agree with it, that we perhaps would have went on to lose that game. We had given St Johnstone a 2-goal head start through our own mistakes, and St Johnstone were 2-0 up with only 2 attacks. But we now have to deal with the consequences of perhaps 3 very important players all missing out next week against Ross County.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point to make, that you are still dealing with the consequences of it. From a journalistic point of view, the comparison is that if a player has a really horrendous game, they have to come out and talk to the press and face up afterwards, whereas at the moment referees and officials in this country don't have to do that. The excuse that is always, or the reason that is always given, is because, well, you wouldn't want to talk to the referee if they did something right. It would only be if they did something wrong. Well, yes, to a certain extent, but not all the time. You know, there could be instances where you feel as if you need to speak to them to clarify something or whatever. And I think they should be able to do that. As you say, I wasn't there on Saturday, but I've watched the highlights back. Graham McGarry was there for our newspapers at the weekend, and I did like his use of the words in the Sunday Herald this morning, talking about the penalty award, saying that he thinks that Charles Dunn used a Jedi mind trick to bring the player down in the box. And it's only, you know, you can hit the nail on the head whenever you watch. I watched it back this morning, and it's incredible. You know, there is absolutely, he's nowhere near me. You see him pull out of the tackle. How I can understand perhaps how the referee from where he was maybe thought it was a penalty because he's behind play, but a linesman should clearly see that. It's just so frustrating, because from what I saw of the Motherwell TV highlights, Motherwell were by far the team in the ascendancy at that point. You know, I think St Johnstone had one attack, but Motherwell highlights showed, unless they're being quite subjective, but it looked as if Motherwell had 6, 7, 8 balls in the box going forward. That chance with Louis Moult in the break, as you said, whenever the play was pulled back, it was just a really, really peculiar refereeing performance. The last time we spoke about this as well, funnily enough, was in McDermott Park. I think it was a St Johnstone Celtic game a couple of months before the end of the season, where I think Celtic had given a penalty when, again, the ball wasn't in the box and there was all sorts of things going on, and it seemed to rear its head again. We keep talking about video technology. This year, the Bundesliga will implement it. I think Eredivisie have started using it a little bit as well. It'll be used in the World Cup next year. It seems as if it's only a matter of time before it's rolled out across the leagues. Whether Scotland can afford it or not, I don't know. The SFA are going to have to get involved with it. I know that the John Fleming, the referees chief of the SFA, has been involved in the testing of it. So we'll need to wait and see. But going back to the game yesterday, I thought it was a ridiculous performance. I was at a wedding yesterday, came outside after the ceremony, looked at my phone, quickly turned my phone back off again, and didn't look at it again for the rest of the night. It was just absolutely bizarre. But again, I think Stephen Robinson mentioned this in his post-match yesterday. A lot of people will forget, and amongst all this, that Motherwell looked as if they played quite well, certainly in the second half, after a ropey 20-25 minutes. They were putting balls into the box, they were putting pressure. Even when they only had 9 men, they were still bombing forward against a decent St Johnstone team, and St Johnstone were on the ropes a little bit at that point. I still think there's a lot of encouragement to be taken. Equally, to be fair, I was in Dingwall the other night. The defence still gives me the fear watching them. I'm not convinced with a couple of them, and I'm not convinced that the back three is working with the three that they're playing. I'm not quite sure what the system was they were playing yesterday, if it was a 3 or a 4, but I think at the moment Motherwell are still too easy to score against, which is my major concern. And especially if they're going into the game against Ross County next week, and you're potentially without your first choice goalkeeper, and at the moment your first choice left back and your captain, that worries me. Although I'd imagine that Dunn and Carson, if Motherwell are appealing them, the appeals might be heard before next Saturday. But still, as you said, the both of you have said, it was a bizarre refereeing performance. But I can't say I'm overly surprised from what I've seen, not just from Craig Thompson, but other referees in Scotland already in the last couple of years.
Jay, the performance itself, and Scott mentioned the system there. I think in the first half, particularly against Ross County, I wasn't sure as to what system we were playing, and it was pretty much the same yesterday as well for quite long spells. I'm not 100% sure that the players on the park are completely familiar with Stephen Robinson's system. A few of them perhaps a wee bit out of their comfort zones, and it's quite telling at some points. I think particularly closing down players in the opposition as they attack, we've been caught short a few times, whether it be yesterday for the first goal, where I think Charles Dunn's really needs to be more alert. Richard Tate for the second goal needs to go across and make the tackle. And I think that can be put down to the system at times as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've obviously discussed it pretty much every week since the start of the season now, that the fact that I don't think any of us have really bought into the back three yet. You know, whether it's a case of players needing to get used to it and you know, getting settled, both in, you know, in terms of the new signings, just getting settled into what is a new team, but also, you know, getting settled into that system. It may come good, but I'm still, you know, like you guys, I've still got, you know, major concerns over it. But, you know, you're right, it does extend to the rest of the team. There was one point at the game yesterday where Alex Fisher, who was playing at left wing, and who I thought, again, just like up in Dingwall when he came on, had a really positive impact on the game, did really well on the left at times. But at one point he got the ball, and Ryan Bowman was out on the left with him, Ryan Bowman, who was playing through the middle. So you had a situation where your two strikers were out on the left wing with nobody in the box. And that's something that actually has happened a few times. It happened against Rangers with Louis Moult being dragged out on the left. It happened up in Dingwall. I mean, it was happening again on Saturday. And I don't know whether that's part of the system. Maybe, you know, strikers come out wide and the idea is for Andy Rose to bomb in, you know, and you know, get on the end across. I'm not sure what the actual game plan is there, but it's clear that there's something not quite working when you've got guys like that being pulled out of position. That said, you know, Scott mentions, you know, what he picked up from the highlights, and I would say that, you know, they were probably pretty representative of the game. I think between you know, Andy Rose scoring and Carson's red card, I thought we were the better team. You know, we went in 2-1 at half time, and despite being 2-0 down and having had looked pretty poor for the first 20 minutes, the chat amongst all of, you know, our group was that we're going to get something here, we're going to get at least a point, because we were the team in the ascendancy. We all looked as though we were going to go on and create something. So as much as I do agree that the back three does look a bit, you know, dodgy, that, you know, it's still got the ability to leak goals, you know, let's not pretend that it was a complete bomb scare yesterday. We were sitting there thinking, we're the team in the ascendancy, we're playing well, we're going to create more chances, and we've got a chance of at least a point here, up until the Craig Thompson show really kicked in. So, you know, it's sort of half and half. I think it would be great for the system to click into place, or for us to find that a system that suits the players we've got, that gives us a little bit more security at the back. But in terms of going forward, I still think we'll look half decent. There's just times when it does seem as though players don't quite know exactly where they're supposed to be.
Scott, you took in the game in Dingwall, and Ross McLean came on to make a huge impact, scoring the winning goal in extra time. Yesterday, Stephen Robinson took out Louis Moult, and I suppose it is an indicator of Louis Moult's start to the season that it didn't come as a major surprise to many that Moult started on the bench. Ryan Bowman and Alex Fisher come in and didn't look particularly familiar with each other. I think the fact that both of them found themselves out in the flanks more often than not didn't help their cause. I think both players come on and they'll give their all, there's absolutely no doubt about that. But you need a striker in the box, and it was a very big factor when you're going forward. You've got nothing in the box because your two front men are wide. I would have quite liked to see McLean brought into the team, given that his confidence must be at an all-time high as well, given that he came on and made such an impact, took his goal incredibly well. So that was a wee bit of a surprise, and you think to next week now, it might be even harder for him to get into the team. So it's disappointing to see a young guy not getting the chance to carry on and kick on his momentum.
I wouldn't be too overly worried about Ross McLean. He did really well, as you say, he did really well in Dingwall coming on. I think going to St Johnston, who are a step up from where Ross County are, with all due respect to Ross County, it was a big game, it was a league game, they needed a first win. I can understand why he maybe went for Ryan Bowman and Alex Fisher rather than Ross McLean. And then when the game's going away from you in the second half, you've got Louis Moult sitting on the bench, you've got Ross McLean. I still think you would go for Louis Moult in that circumstance. I think Ryan Bowman and Alex Fisher both did really well in Dingwall when they came on. Jay mentioned it there as well. As much as Alex Fisher probably could have had a couple, and probably should have had at least one, if he's being honest with himself, I still thought he did really well. You know, he gives everything. You know, he covers a lot. He doesn't look that quick, and he looks at times, you know, it doesn't look like a striker, but he got about the part really well in Dingwall. I can understand why Robbo went for him yesterday. Ryan Bowman as well seems to get in the head, get the ball up, and gets flick-ons, gets knockdowns and stuff. But it just might be that the two of them aren't on the same wavelength yet. I wouldn't worry about that. But going back to what you were talking about, the defence, I think the back three, I thought at Rangers, certainly in the first half against Rangers, that's what caused all the problems. They were down the Motherwell right-hand side. Richard Tate was getting sucked out, and what Rangers were simply doing was playing the ball into Dorans from the wing, then immediately back out again, almost like a triangle, playing it around Richard Tate, and Josh Windass had the run in. And I thought in the second half, Motherwell rectified that and managed to fix it and identified it. I wouldn't be overly concerned. I'm told that Charles Dunn is not 100% yet, and when he is, he'll be a little bit better than what we've seen. I think he's been okay, he's been steady, but I think it's not a time to panic just yet. I think it's worth bearing in mind that this is a fairly new, whether it's a back three or a back four, it's still a new back three and back four that is getting tested in the last two, three games. 10 times more than it did throughout the entirety of the Betfred Cup campaign. And I think it's just going to take a little bit of time. Regarding the midfield system as well, if they do play three at the back, that allows an extra body in the middle of the park, and it may just be working out space and working out where everybody is. I think with Gael Bigger Amara in the middle of the park sitting, he'll be a tremendous player for Motherwell this season. Of that, I've no doubt. Any time I've seen him, he's looked a complete class act. You know, he starts off every move. The passes are sharp. They're quick. There's no hesitancy in him. And I think that'll make a big difference. For me, it's going to be interesting, though, where Chris Cadden plays this season, because Chris, historically, I always preferred him playing through the middle. I thought he had a bit of power to him. But in the last kind of few months, I think his best work has been as an out-and-out winger. I'm curious to see how that's going to work with him in the right wing and Richard Tate. If they do continue to play at a three with Richard Tate, basically within 10 yards of him, I'm not sure how that works. I'm not saying it's wrong, I'm not sure how it's going to play out. It's been a worrying start for Louis Moult. From a Motherwell fans' point of view, obviously got a couple of cracking goals in the Betfred Cup, but since then has looked off it, hasn't looked right. At times his link-up play on midweek I thought was okay, before he was taken off, but he looked knackered when he went off. It was the same against Rangers as well. He's not quite as sharp as he was. Whether that's psychological or not, I don't know. With Aberdeen signing Stevie Major in the week, I think that puts paid to any talk of Aberdeen coming back in for him. So you've got to really think, if Louis Moult is going to go anywhere, it's going to be back down south. And to my knowledge, there's not really been that many inquiries about him so far. So I'd be semi-confident that he would be hanging about. But on the form that he is just now, he's not half as much use now as he would have been the way he was playing 3 or 4 months ago.
Jay, that being said, you would still expect a player of Moult's quality to rediscover that form. It's just going to take time, I suppose, to get that match sharpness back, whether it be having to play a few games from the bench or whether maybe just a goal actually kicks him on and kind of reignites the spark. Because a guy that has contributed so much over the last couple of seasons, possibly single-handedly, his goals kept us up last season. I really don't want my final memories of Moult to be the guy that's running about kind of like a headless chicken, just trying too hard to make an impact. It's just not quite coming off for him just now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously not knowing the reasons why make it quite hard to, you know, assess what it will be that will get him to, you know, click back into that form. If it is just physical, if it's, you know, recovery from injury and not quite getting up to speed in terms of fitness, then yeah, you would hope that a couple of weeks down the line, then everything should click back into place. If it's more mental, then, you know, it might be a little bit more tricky. I certainly feel from both the Rangers game and up in Dingwall, he just looked as though his head isn't in it. It didn't look necessarily about fitness. It just looked that his head wasn't quite there. But, you know, Rangers, they started getting really petulant, should have been sent off. Up in Dingwall, again, there seemed to be a lot of back chat to the referee. He had one instance where he waited for the shove in the back that never came and still threw himself down in an absolutely embarrassing dive. So there seems to be, you know, some sort of petulance kind of creeping into his game in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, maybe that's down to, you know, for whatever reason, his head's not in where it should be. And then, of course, it becomes a question of why that is. If it is simply that the speculation or the questions over his future are getting to him, then you would hope that if he remains a Motherwell player come the transfer deadline date, then that should be enough to maybe get his head, you know, back where it should be. But it just, you know, it's something we're going to have to just wait and see how it plays out, because, you know, none of us really know exactly what's going on with Moult, both in terms of, you know, physical and mental aspects. So it's more just about, you know, seeing what happens. At the moment, Moult, in my opinion, it's better for Motherwell for Moult not to be in the team, because I don't think he's offered anything from the start against Rangers or against Ross County. And although Alex Fisher is yet to score, I think Alex Fisher has contributed a lot more to the team as a whole, you know, since the start of the season. And personally, I just think he just needs a goal to go in to get that monkey off his back, and I think Fisher's got the potential to be an excellent player for us. So if it was a choice between Fisher and Moult, I'd be going with Fisher every day of the week at the moment, because Moult just isn't offering enough, and maybe it will just take, you know, 1 or 2 weeks on the bench you know, have that impact, because it's still great, you know, it's still great to be able to bring someone like Louis Mo on, and when you're, you know, about to make that substitution, you know that some of the opposition players and some of the opposition fans are going to be thinking, you know, oh shit, here we go, because they recognise he's a great player and he's a game changer. So it's good to have that weapon on the bench. Obviously it'd be far better to have him, you know, firing on both cylinders from the start, but it's something we're just going to have to wait and see how it plays out. I agree with Scott. I think he'll be here after the deadline day, and it's just a case of keeping our fingers crossed and hoping so physical and mentally he gets you know, everything right and can start contributing like he was the last couple of seasons.
Scott, I suppose as well, you're talking about there's been little interest from down south. Lumo is going to need to start performing again to heighten that interest in Getty's move, because as it stands, Aberdeen have sought a replacement, or, well, to be fair, they did inquire about Stevie May before they did Louis Moult. They've now got their man, or they've got a man that they wanted, so it's up to Louis Moult to stake his claim to get a move again. It's a pretty fickle game, and if people are coming to watch Louis Moult just now, then they're not going to go back to the respective clubs and say, this is a guy you should be signing.
Yeah, I'm apologising in advance here. I'm going to say the M-word. Mark McGee used to talk about this, and he was right in what he was saying, that whenever you look at English players where somebody maybe up here goes for £1 million and somebody goes down south for £10 million, you're not necessarily with that £10 million buying 10 times the player. What you're maybe doing is buying a player of a similar quality, but who has got much better consistency. And he used to say this, that a player up here that's worth £1 million as a striker, one week will be a 9 out of 10, and then the next week will be a 3 out of 10. Whereas in England, they'll consistently be 7, 7, 7, 8, 7, 7. And I think that's the difference. I think English, Scottish clubs up here would take a punt in Louis Moult based on the player that we saw playing in the Betfred Cup, the goals he scored in the Betfred Cup games, and the player that he has been for Motherwell over the last two seasons, scoring 18 goals in both seasons. Whereas I think English clubs, you're right, will come up here, we'll see a highlights reel of him online or in Y-Scout and think, he looks tremendous, let's go and watch him. And you've seen him in the last couple of weeks where he's just not quite been himself. You're right, if Louis Moult does want to move, and I don't want to say that he does want to move, because he does enjoy here, he does have a special appreciation of the club. I don't think he's trying to engineer a move for himself. If the right one falls in front of him, I think he would jump at it. But I don't think, if something's not there from this window, I don't think he's going to throw the dummy at the pram. I think he will keep on playing, plugging away, and try and do the best for the club. Having spoken to him several times, he's too professional not to have that attitude. But you're right, I think clubs coming up and look at him just now, I mean, what are we? We're on the 13th of August. We're not that far away from the transfer deadline day. You know, you're only just over a fortnight away from it now. You know, if he's only really got, I would say, the Ross, you've only really got one, maybe two games left for him to really impress. If anybody's going to come in with the money anywhere near of what Motherwell are looking for him now, the figures that have been, there's different figures have been quoted for what Aberdeen offered for Louis Moult. Not all of them accurate. I'm not sure if any of them are accurate, but I can tell you that they were less than half of what Motherwell are realistically looking for him. So for anybody to come in and offer money for him, he's going to have to really play out his skin over the next week, couple of weeks. And from what we've seen at the moment, for whatever reason, he just doesn't look, I don't know if he's capable enough of hitting the ground running. As Jay said, it may just be the case of he needs a goal to kickstart him and let his confidence grow. As we all know, strikers are confidence players, and to be honest, Louis Moult, we've never seen him go through a kind of spell like this, because he's always been, whenever he's been fit, he's always been banging in the goals, whether from inside the box or out. But I think you're right in what you're saying. If he is going to go, he's going to have to hit form really, really soon. And on the basis of that, that is another reason why I think, as well as the Aberdeen thing, that's why I think he'll be at Motherwell. I'm not sure if he'll be able to turn it on quickly enough for a championship club down south to really look at him and go, you know what, we're going to take a chance on you.
Just keeping on transfers for just a couple more minutes. Marvin Johnson linked with a move this week, Leeds United, Hull City. Do we call them Hull City Tigers now? No, I don't think we will.
No, we don't.
They both linked with Marvin and Jay. It's a player that we know that we've got it has got a sell on value to Motherwell. That could maybe tide us over for this transfer window. Certainly, I believe that he's a £10 million, maybe £15 million player.
Absolutely. No, I mean, Marvin Johnson's a good example of the kind of the foresight and the kind of the club's transfer dealings now. You know, the idea that we're not just selling players for profit. You know, part of the whole transfer business model of bringing in, you know, the English players and selling them on, you know, it's not just about making a profit based on how much we paid for them. It's obviously about safeguarding any, you know, future financial bonus, you know, further down the line. And it's just so happened that this looks as though it's going to be one that works really, really well for us. So fingers crossed that he does. I mean, again, if he doesn't go this transfer window but goes in January for a wee bit more, then, you know, that would be welcomed as well.
Well, I suppose if it comes to deadline day and he's not getting his move, he could always just threaten to strike and he'll get it that way. But we'll wait and see how it goes. The Ross County game, we'll finally got on to talking about what was the certain highlight of the week. An enthralling game of football in the end, I suppose. The first 90 minutes, perhaps not the most entertaining I've ever seen, but extra time, it was really compulsive viewing. We managed to get ourselves 2-1 ahead before Charles Dunn sent off, a penalty, and Craig Curran equalises for County before Ross McLean, who'd come off the bench, rounds the goalkeeper to win it in quite dramatic style. A kind of small band of supporters onto the side of the pitch. It was just kind of relief and joy that we've not really experienced in the cup competitions in recent years. The reward for that will be a quarter-final tie at Fir Park in front of the television cameras against Aberdeen. And Scott, I think that it was a significant win. We haven't had much joy in recent years in the cup. Ross County, a very hard place to go. It was a difficult journey for, I thought, what was a very healthy Motherwell support, maybe about 250 fans making their way up on a Wednesday night. So, yeah, I think if we look back, when we do come to look back in the season, this will be right up there as one of the highlights and a very, very good win.
Yeah, absolutely. And it shows you the fine margins, though, doesn't it, Andy? I mean, you think of this week, obviously losing the Rangers in the game that Motherwell have just had. Can you imagine what the mood and the message boards would be like and Twitter would have been like if Motherwell had lost that game on Wednesday? You know, the knives would have been out. I'm up for some people already, the knicker-wetters that are amongst the Motherwell fans in certain aspects of it. But you're right, you know, it's a game Motherwell effectively had to win three times to eventually get it over the line. I'd written in my piece that in the run-up to that, across all knockout matches, so not including Betfred Cup group games, but knockout matches, Motherwell had only won three out of the previous 22 going into that, which is a horrific record. So at the point of whenever Craig Curran puts that goal in and Charles Dunn gets sent off for the first time this week, you think at that point the game's up. But goal credit has to go to the team, to Stephen Robinson, for changing it the way he did and being brave and showing faith in a boy like Ross McLean to go on and produce something from nowhere. Ross McLean is a bit of an unknown quantity, even to some Motherwell fans, I would imagine, haven't seen a lot of him. You know, he's had a lot of injuries and he did well. And as we spoke about earlier on, I wouldn't be too overly worried that he didn't get his chance at the weekend. I think he will get his chance will come. But you're right, it was a terrific second half, and for a neutral, it must have been absolutely great watching. But from a semi-neutral point, because I was up there with work, it was absolutely torture. But you know, Motherwell getting into the next round of the cup. Aberdeen are a good team, don't get me wrong, but I think any draw that didn't have you against Celtic would have been a good draw. You know, or even Rangers at Ibrox to a lesser extent. I think a home draw against anybody bar Celtic, Motherwell would fancy their chances, you know, of doing something against. It's been a long time coming. I'm trying to think how old I was. I'd been four the last time Motherwell won anything. I wasn't even there. So, you know, it's about time Motherwell did win something. If they win this, they're in a semi-final. And again, if you look round at the other draws, if they can stay away from Celtic, there's a real chance of them getting to a final here. But Aberdeen have been Motherwell's kind of Achilles heel cup competitions at Fir Park before. You think back to that night game a few years ago where I think there was an offside decision. There was Josh Shaughnessy gets sent off as well, and it came back. I think Motherwell lost 2-0 that night. But, you know, I think this team is different. There's a different mentality about this team that Motherwell have. Again, with Bigger Amana, Andy Rose, Craig Tanner, there's a touch of the kind of Ross McCormick's about Craig Tanner, I think, when you watch him. I think there is the makings of a really a dynamic Motherwell team here that is flexible. I know, you think back to Jim Gannon, and Jim Gannon was a bit off the chart, but if you think of the team that he had, you know, you guys like Ross Forbes coming in, you had Jamie Murphy playing well, you had Chris Humphrey, Giles Coke, Steve Jennings, these kind of players. This team has a similar vibe to it. Under Mark McGee, I think you knew you were going to get, you were getting guys brought in and loan from down south, and you had Joe Chalmers, and you had these kind of players. This team doesn't feel like that to me. I think there's a dynamism about this Motherwell team that you will see them playing as, I think we're just going to have to accept that. You're going to see them play like they did midweek and get a result, and you're maybe going to have games like Saturday there where they play well in patches, but they end up coming away with nothing. But without a doubt, this is a tasty tie, but is a winnable tie for Motherwell.
Jay, I think on the draw, you see the Thursday night game and the television, think that will maybe affect the crowd, but Motherwell and Aberdeen have already come to an agreement that £10 for adults, £5 for kids. Aberdeen taking nearly 2,000 to Hamilton Accies for their second round match. This could be a really healthy crowd as well, and I think that Stephen Robinson has already mentioned the need for Park to become a bit more of a fortress, for a want of a better expression. I think in the last couple of years, Motherwell have been too easy to beat at home. Teams are turning up, seeing the nice pitch and playing their own brand of football on it and coming away with 3 points. Hopefully, those times are changing and teams like Aberdeen, Hibs, Hearts are going to come to Fir Park and realise they're really on for a game.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea about having the best pitch in Scotland but not being able to play any football on it was, you know, a weekly thing for us last season. You know, particularly near the end of the season, where we basically had to resort to the long ball just to try and grind out results to keep us in the division. I tend to agree with Scott. I think that the team that we're starting to put together does look that it can, at least in spells of games, you know, play really good, positive football. I like a lot of the new signings we've brought in. I think, well, you know, regardless of how we look at the moment in terms of 0 points on the board, after two games, I think we are far and away a better squad than we were from last season. I think the character of the players is already far better than it was. Scott mentioned, you know, the M word earlier. I mean, I think a Mark McGee side that had conceded a goal in the first 4 minutes to Rangers would have probably folded. I think a Mark McGee side that conceded that penalty to Ross County and had a man sent off would have put everybody behind the ball to try and grind out, you know, the draw to take it to penalties. And even on Saturday, even when Carson gets sent off, I think there was a thought that went through my head that actually, somewhere in the back of my mind, I wondered if, you know, the injustice of being down to 10 men would spark that character back into life and would actually help us, you know, find that equalising goal. There does seem to be something different about the side now that we've not seen for a good few years. And in terms of even just, particularly at Fir Park, the relationship between the players and the fans has been something that's perhaps been missing since the best years of McCall's reign. I think, you know, you look back at perhaps 2010 to maybe 2013, 2014, there seemed to be a really fantastic connection between the players on the park and the fans in the ground, particularly down at, you know, that end section of the East Stand. And that's something that has been eradicated over the last year or two under Barakoff and McGee, and I think you're starting to see that even this early on with a lot of new signings. You're starting to see that, and I think the seasons for Ross McLean's winner at Dingwall kind of highlighted that. You know, it wasn't just some guys, you know, over exuberant running on the park. It was genuinely celebrating the goal together with the players. So I think you've managed to get that with a squad with a lot of new signings, and that's only going to grow. And I think if you can get that at Fir Park, where there is that connection, there is that character, and you've got players on the park who can actually play good, attractive attacking football on the best pitch in Scotland, then I would like to think that we can start to turn Fir Park into a, you know, make it once again a difficult place for teams to come. I mean, you factor in that, yes, it's going to be a, you know, a night, an evening game underneath the floodlights, a one-off cup tie, has to be a winner on the night. Aberdeen will bring, you know, a good support, as they always do. You would like to think a lot of Motherwell fans get out. It's got the potential to be a really good game, and it's got the potential to be by far the tie of the round. And obviously, if we can hopefully have things you know, a little bit more settled, looking a little bit more solid, particularly at the back by then, as Scott said, it's certainly a winnable tie. And, you know, the way that the League Cup is set up now to get the rounds kind of quick and, you know, coming, you know, thick and fast, we could be, you know, in a semi-final, you know, only a couple of months into the season, which would be a fantastic achievement.
We'll look ahead to next Saturday's Scottish Premiership fixture against Ross County, second home fixture of the season. Scott, we've obviously only just encountered Ross County in what was a very competitive 120 minutes. Jim McIntyre, I think, is a very underrated manager. He continues to get success out of a limited bunch of players, I would say. I think that's possibly a fair assessment. They're a contender for the top six on most occasions, perhaps. That is due to going and or delving into the January transfer market and finding a fair bit of success. This season, they've had to line up without the goals of Liam Boyce, but I've already started with a win against Dundee and then the loss yesterday at home to Aberdeen. It'll certainly be a difficult game, and I said last week in the podcast, you don't want to be searching about for that first victory. It would be very good to get that monkey off our back, and then we've got a run of home games where there's certainly points to be gained.
Yeah, firstly, talking about Ross County, I think you're right, Andy. They do have a good enough group. I think that they should be okay this year. I say that because, as you say, if they don't do well in the first half of the season, Roy McGregor will always put his hand in his pocket and will always go out into the transfer window and spend and bring people in, whether it's in loan deals from bigger clubs down south or manage to get players in on a transfer. They don't have Liam Boyce, you're right, but from what I saw of them the other night, I didn't think they were brilliant against Motherwell. Again, it's early in the season. I wouldn't be too harsh in Ross County, just as I wouldn't be too harsh in Motherwell at this season if there are any glitches like the back three issue that was already spoken about. I do think they do have a couple of very good players in their team. Scott Fox is a great goalkeeper and will do well in defence. At centre half, I think Andrew Davis does the job for them and marshals them very, very well.
I thought he was absolutely fantastic the other night. I was really impressed by Davis.
Yeah, it was really good. The other player that really impressed me the other night, I mean, Alex Schalk is a good player and I always like him, and I think he will get goals. Whether he's an out-and-out goal scorer, I'm not sure, but he will be an asset to them if they can hold on to him. But I thought Michael Gardine the other night was terrific for Ross County, constantly cutting in from the right hand side. He was causing havoc in the line between the Motherwell midfield and the defence. He was getting into all sorts of areas and causing trouble everywhere he went. I think he's a really good player, and on a Fir Park pitch, which is a bit bigger than the Ross County one, I think he could cause problems. The game of the weekend is tricky because you ask yourself, does the cup game have any sort of bearing on it? I think it might do. It's difficult to predict how it's going to go because at this stage we don't know what Motherwell team Stephen Robinson is able to field given the three sendings off we've had yesterday. But I think what you can say is it will be tight. I don't see either team blowing the other one away. The only difference is that, as we've already spoken about, if Louis Molt is playing and manages to get an early goal, that could galvanise him and inspire him on to win what we know he's capable of having a goal scoring spree of getting 2, 3, 4 in the one game. But I really can't see it. Thinking ahead to Saturday, I'm struggling with the way that Ross County have started the season, the way Motherwell have started, and the squad problems that Motherwell may have. I think it might be a draw on Saturday, which against Ross County isn't a horrendous result, far from it. But you're right, Motherwell really need to start. They need to get a win on the board quickly, not for any sort of threat to relegation or safety or any of that nonsense, but just purely for morale, to get it off their back, to get it going. Because we saw a couple of years ago, if you remember, Partick Thistle, I think, in the first year up from coming up in the first division, it was not March or April they went before they actually won a home game. You want to get that off your back straight away. Again, you look at both games that they've played. The Rangers game, Motherwell really should have had a draw. If not, they could have sneaked a win at the end. by the sound of it, if it wasn't for the intervention of Craig Thompson, they probably could have got a draw. They were certainly knocking on the door to get a draw yesterday. So getting one this weekend would really, I think, steady any sort of doubters that are getting worried about where Motherwell are this season. I'll reiterate, I think Motherwell will be absolutely fine this season. I don't think they'll be anywhere near the trouble that they were almost in last year. But for the sake of everybody else's nervous system, a win sooner rather than later is obviously preferred, and it may come this weekend, but I think it's going to be difficult for them.
Jay, I would have to agree with that. It's not a game that many will seek out in the coupon as a certain home win or a certain away win. But I think a home game against a side that we would rate quite similar to ourselves, you've got to be looking to win, particularly at Fir Park.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I tend to agree with everything that's been said. It's going to be a very tricky game, as, you know, they all are. It's that kind of cliche, you know, there's no easy games, but we're not. As I said, we are an improved squad than last season, but we're not, you know, to any great lengths that we're going to be looking at any particularly easy games this season. Ross County will come down, possibly, you know, with a bit of a bee in their bonnet here to, you know, seek revenge for being knocked out of the cup on Wednesday. You know, on the flip side, no doubt a lot of the Motherwell players will take a lot of confidence from what happened on Wednesday, and will know that this is a team that they can beat. So it could actually be a very good game. I think if any team does win it, then it will be by the odd goal. I tend to agree with Scott. I think a draw is perhaps the most likely result. That said, it's a game we can win. And to be honest, I mean, I agree with Scott. It's not relegation is not something I think is going to be a particularly big danger to Motherwell this season. I think we'll be looking at around eighth, perhaps going into the last few weeks before the split with an outside chance of making the split. I'm not sure whether we're quite good enough to make it. So I'm thinking maybe about seventh or eighth. And if we are going to finish there, then I think, you know, home games against a team like Ross County are perhaps the games that you should be looking to win. So, again, you know, it's so difficult at this stage of the week. It's the day after St Johnstone. We don't really know. We obviously have heard rumblings that two of the red cards are going to be appealed. We don't know when those appeals will be heard. We just really don't know what to expect from what, you know, what kind of team Motherwell can put out on Saturday. But if we can put out a team that is reasonably strong, reasonably settled, then I would at least be going into the game confident of nicking the win by the odd goal. But I do tend to agree, a draw just to get points on the board at this stage wouldn't be the worst result going.
This week saw the departure of Jacob Blythe from Fir Park. It was a figure that perhaps been talked about a lot more in the podcast than they played football in the park at Motherwell, it must be said. I don't think it was a massive surprise, Scott, that the kind of negative attention that was brought to the press, and to be fair, I don't think it was a massive story, really. I think that his girlfriend, or I used the word celebrity in inverted commas, celebrity girlfriend, was the only reason he found himself on the front page of the national newspaper in question. But at the same time, a player injured, you would kind of hope that he was conducting himself slightly better than he was. Motherwell and Jacob Blythe have managed to come to an agreement to tend his spell at the club. It's one that will be looked back on with very little memories, never mind any fond or negative memories, I suppose.
Yeah, I think he got his contract terminated because he's due to be on Celebrity Bake Off in the next month or so. Listen, he's somebody that you do feel sorry for Jacob Blythe a little bit, because he was brought in from Leicester, and I think whenever he first came in, a lot of people probably looked at him and thought, of all the signings that we had at that point, I think he came in with Richard Tate. I think he was part of that trio. There was somebody else that was unveiled at the same time who escaped me, but I think there was high hopes for him. You know, he looked tall, looked physical. Kind of, I think people probably thought, looking at him, thought there's maybe kind of Lukas Djukovic about him, you know, with his stature. And but he just didn't. I don't want to say he didn't cut it, because that's maybe been a bit unfair. He just was beset with injuries all the time, and Motherwell fans, from what they saw, limited they saw of him, he just wasn't good enough. But again, I don't want to be too harsh on him, because I don't think he was ever fully fit enough to really see what he was all about. The incident with him on the front page with his young lady. It was unfortunate, but I think it was just it just kind of summed things up, didn't it? You know, I did laugh at whenever, you're much as you're saying his girlfriend used inverted commas to describe his girlfriend as a celebrity. I did laugh whenever there was, or chuckle to myself when somebody, I think it was the Daily Mail or another English-based website, described him as the Motherwell star. I'm like, God, it's stretching it. Like, I think you're more of a Motherwell star, Andy, than what Jacob Blythe has ever been. But you know, good luck to him. He's injury problems, which is why we've still not seen him. Now he's still out injured, but he's going to have to move on. The positive side for it, from a Motherwell perspective, and we've spoken to Stephen Robinson about this as well, having him off the books frees up wages that can either go to trying to bring somebody else in, because I think Stephen Robinson is still looking for another striker, somebody with pace that can go in, can run in behind, which at the moment we don't have, or to potentially chuck more money towards extending contracts of others. Now Louis Moult, the Motherwell have already gone out on a limb to offer Louis Moult more money. He's currently sitting with an offer on the table that will make him the highest paid player at Motherwell by a distance. Whether or not they will choose to use the Jacob Blythe money to add to that is going to be intriguing, because as we've already discussed, he's not in the best of form at the moment. Motherwell may hedge their bets and think, well, what's the chances of somebody else coming in for him in the next fortnight? We might just leave it. Or they might think, no, we still want to get him tied down on an extension to kind of protect our interests and protect our assets, and use some of the Jacob Blythe money to bump Louis Moult's contract up, offer up even further. On top of that, Stephen Robinson has also said to us that Louis Moult is not the only Motherwell player that he's wanting to tie down on a contract extension. It's hard. I'm trying to think who it possibly could be. Probably maybe Ben Hennigan, I think, because maybe Richard Tate as well, because Carl McHugh's recently signed one, Chris Cadden's recently signed one, and apart from that, a lot of everyone else around the club is quite new. You know, so I think it's maybe probably Ben Hennigan or Richard Tate. They're maybe thinking about offering an extension to as well. So, from that perspective, I think it's best for all parties that Jacob Blythe left. But it's another player to look at and think of what could have been. You put him in the bracket of, is it John Griechen? Remember him, the boy that came in a few years ago and disappeared into the ether we never saw again. Darren Smith was another one who came through the youth and looked as if he was going to be a player, and it kind of fell away and didn't happen for him. But these things happen. But I think we've been lucky with Motherwell over the last few years. If you think of Marvin Johnson, who you've spoken about, Louis Moult, there's been enough players coming through. Motherwell have managed to unearth a few gems, but I think it was clear pretty quickly on that Jacob Blythe was not going to be one of them.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much covered that chapter of the podcast, and until he makes his appearance at the Mega Bar to do meet and greets, then I don't think we'll see Jacob Blythe again. A few things going on off the park. Yesterday, the Welsh Society Whiskey Distillery Tour and ticket package seemed to go down very well. I wasn't part of it myself, but obviously you were, Jay. Good to see different initiatives being made by the society, kind of carrying on the better communications work and more event-driven ways that the society seems to be working in. So, a successful afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, numbers weren't perhaps as great as the deal actually deserved. I mean, it was given, I think it was £30 for a Welsh Society member to get travel, a tour and taste, tour of the distillery, three whisky tastings and into the game. And considering it was £23 to get into the game, that's a lot for your £7. So we didn't quite get the numbers we'd hoped for, but it's something we'll certainly be doing again, because that's what fan ownership, in my opinion, should be more about. It should be about, you know, engaging folk, getting folk, you know, involved in different things and feeling a part of something, and also giving, you know, members of the Welsh Society more kind of benefits and more exclusive things that they're entitled to, and that's what it was primarily about. So it certainly meant that the distillery visit was the highlight of the day, and a big thanks obviously has to go to John Torrance at Dolly Barden for arranging it. He's a Motherwell fan, he's a Welsh Society member, And he also has contacts in other kind of breweries and gin distilleries and things like that. So it's certainly something we might look at doing again. But you're right, it's kind of just symbolic of what we're trying to do now, trying to make the society less about just telling people that they need to donate every week or every month, and more about actually giving them something, you know, worthwhile for their money. So in terms of future events like that, watch this space.
And I've got to give thanks to Christopher Hutton at the Mullow Central branch, who not only printed out voting forms for the 25 greatest Mullow post-war players, he also pinched 50 pence from his work as well to make sure that they were all filled in properly. So I really appreciate getting a lot of extra votes, and I'll need to be getting updating my spreadsheet through the week. We've also had Davy Young design a voting website, which we've been testing tonight. There's still a few wee tweaks needed, but that's almost there as well. So you'll be able to get your vote in via the website. If you've already voted by email, you don't need to vote again. We've already got your vote, but this just makes it slightly easier for us to calculate the votes. We'll also have voting forums at the Well Society booths inside the Davy Cooper Suite and Centenary Suite on Saturday, as well as Club 100 and hopefully a few of the surrounding pubs as well. So we're going all out to get these votes in, and it's very, very close as it stands. Pre-orders for Off Air 3, which will reveal the top 25 players, are available now. I can't stress enough the need for pre-orders, because that is totally what funds the book. We're raising money for the Well Society. If we can raise a great sum, we can then have it doubled by Les Hutchison, which is nice. And if you heard Les in the podcast, it's very nice to think that he will have to spend money due to the podcast as well. So yeah, please, if you can, get involved, get your vote in. It's not an easy decision picking your top 10, but it'll all go towards our top 25. And yeah, and if anyone votes for Jacob Blythe, it'll automatically be dismissed and put in the bin. Scott,
not even Jacob Blythe would be voting for Jacob Blythe.
Well, there's been a few controversial ones, but none for Jacob Blythe as yet. Scott, since the last time you were on the podcast, you've obviously, I was going to say moved up in the world, but you've moved up within your profession, and congratulations for that. How has your role changed? And I would hope you're enjoying it.
Yeah, thanks. No, it's good. Trying to take a more hands-on role with kind of organising things and looking at different ways we do things digitally. One of the things that we do now is we've got a Herald Sport podcast similar to what yourself and Jason do, but not just focusing on football, but trying to broaden it to ice. We've had people from ice hockey and rugby. You've spoken about the UFC, Formula One. We try and do different things as well. So there's a Herald Sport podcast out this every Friday that we try and do something different, which is on iTunes and Podbean as well. You can stream it online. So we started to do that. We're doing more Facebook Live things. We had the Newbury head clan head coach in the office on Friday, and we've had about 8,000 people watched live as he was speaking. So I mean, things like that are good. I was away with Celtic a couple of weeks ago in Norway, and we did a Facebook Live there that has about 11,000 views as well. So it's interesting, because there are some in the industry that are maybe more for doing things on digital, whether it's social media or whether it's doing Facebook Live videos or whether it's doing podcasts or whatever you want to do. But I think it's important, especially for newspapers with the way circulations are at the moment, it's important that you can be all things to everybody rather than just a newspaper outlet, especially when media is instant these days. You know, there was a thing a couple of weeks ago where, I forget what it is, but the biggest story, whatever it was, broke at 11 o'clock in the morning, and we had a discussion, an editorial sport meeting later on that day, where they were going to put it on the front page, but you kind of flagged up, well, by the time everybody picks that paper up the next day, everybody's going to know about that. So why are we still, as much as it may have been the biggest thing that happened that day, unless you can move on, why have that there? I think it was Derek McInnes, when Derek McInnes got his new contract, that's what it was, at Aberdeen. Why, you know, it came out quite early, so why have that on the front page of the paper when everybody knows about it? You should probably try and move on and think of something different. And I think newspapers need to do that. We need to try and be a bit more adaptive and dynamic with how we cover things, and that's what we're trying to do at the Herald and the Evening Times and the Sunday Herald as well, and the National, because they come under our bracket as well. But I mean, you guys will know as well as I do how much traction and how much interest you can get from doing of trying to reach out to people using alternative means. The club, Motherwell, are very, very good at that as well. We've seen, you know, obviously the Open Day recently, but they started doing Facebook Lives and they do different things, including the commentary, which I'm involved in on occasion as well, with Graham Barnstable and Lewis Irons. And I think these things are so important nowadays because, as I've already touched on, everybody wants news instantly. And to be honest, social media, the days of, I mean, I was a member of Steelmen Online for the last kind of 10 years, and it's been quite sad to see the site dwindle a little bit, as it has done, but it's only because social media has taken over, and now people are reacting to things on Twitter and on Facebook and in groups on there, and it would be remiss of newspapers not to try and tap into that and try and offer their content to people. You've got a captive audience when you look at markets like this. And that's something that we are trying to do, to give more people more of what they want, and that includes obviously covering not just Rangers and Celtic but other sports and of course clubs like Motherwell.
Jay, all of Scott's work there is made even more impressive by the fact that he can't work Skype.
Absolutely.
Scott, thank you very much for your time tonight, mate. It's much appreciated as always.
No, and thanks for having me on.
Let's do it again quite soon.
Certainly.
Jay, thanks again, mate.
Cheers.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Is a wall.